the logical end result of not treating life as precious. Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principles and Policy. And along with me today, as usual, is our co-host, my Vice Chairman of the Institute, fellow analyst, and very good friend, Chuck Michaels.
And sitting here rather disturbed thinking about today's topic.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, this is something that both Chuck and I ran into. We're taping this on Wednesday night. We ran into this earlier in the afternoon, and it was some information that's coming out. There was recently a scientific journal called the Journal of Medical Ethics recently published an article by two researchers, and it's what these researchers posited, Chuck, in the article that has us very much disturbed, concerned, but also sitting there saying, this is the logical end of the devaluation of life. And folks, what it is that these two researchers, a man by the name of Alberto Ghibellini and Francesca Minerva.
And congratulations for attempting that.
Ghibellini
or whatever the name is a little difficult.
Yeah, well, we'll give that. But the point is, these two researchers wrote an article in the Journal of Medical Ethics that was just published recently entitled, After Birth Abortion, Why Should the Baby Live? Yes, you heard me right, ladies and gentlemen, after birth abortion. Chuck, honestly, in one sentence, I sat there and thought about it and thought, you know, well, should have seen this coming. This is the logical endpoint. If we say that a life doesn't need to be protected at certain points on the front end of the spectrum, and we certainly have what seems to be at least a drive toward devaluing life at the late end of the spectrum, i.e. with the elderly and end-of-life issues, that why would it be so very outside the realm of possibility that somebody would say, well, what about that point right after birth or when the children are young and in their handful, the terrible twos or the impossible threes? Why don't we just say that, hey, you know, no harm, no foul. We didn't expect this. Parents can't handle it. Oh, let's abort. It's just like, let's abort the mission, only this one's got some definite terminal implications to it.
Well, this is a loaded theological question. Not theological, but pardon me.
Well, no, you're right. It is theological as well.
Obviously, but it's also a loaded presuppositional question.
Yes, it is.
This is top heavy with the underlying presuppositions. And by that, I mean, when you introduce arbitrariness into any logical thought, then that arbitrariness requires more and more and more arbitrariness in an attempt to make it make sense. And in fact, you're right. This is the logical endpoint of assuming an arbitrary beginning and allowing someone to create an arbitrary beginning of life. And since that arbitrary nature of that beginning doesn't make sense in the first place, the endpoint obviously also doesn't make any sense. The fact that someone has a PhD or an MD or a DO or some kind of an advanced degree on the back of their name doesn't mean that they are, frankly, particularly moral. It certainly doesn't mean they're necessarily thinking straight. It means that they have supposedly a philosophical underpinning to the way they think. That's what an advanced degree is about, why it's called a doctor of philosophy. You understand your subject from a philosophical standpoint. When you adopt a bad philosophy, that philosophy is going to lead you to a bad place. And this is exactly where we are. We have adopted a bad philosophy with an arbitrary viewpoint of life. And therefore, we are at a place where, yeah, what the heck? You can kill babies, not just babies, but infants up to an age which is still undetermined. But we'll get into how they define it a little later. But it's, again, completely arbitrary.
Well, and again, this is a situation that these two, Ghibellini, if you want to pronounce it that way, and Minerva, these two researchers, now they're both from Melbourne, Australia. So we'll give you that. So these are not American researchers, but America is no stranger to this kind of argument because Princeton University bioethicist, and I use that term very loosely, Dr. Peter Singer, who's an endowed chair at the university, has been promoting this thesis in America, Chuck, probably for the last 15 years, arguing that children up to the age of 3 years old could be, the parents should have the legal right to have their children terminated up to the age of three. Now, I believe that these two researchers are just carrying on a similar theme. Now, Singer has written this mainly in popular genres. In other words, he writes books to stir people up. But this is, I believe, and I'm probably wrong, but this is the first time to my understanding that what would be considered a peer-reviewed journal of the medical profession is actually seriously considering or allowing these type of views to be seriously put into the mix. Singer has kind of been an outlier for the most part in the ethics community for this particular position. But now we have a journal, a peer-reviewed journal, who has put this article in place that basically says that newborn babies are not, quote, actual persons, unquote. And so therefore they do not have a, quote, moral right to life, unquote. And, hey, that child happened to maybe be disabled when it was born, had a condition, talked about like trisomy 21 and things of that nature, or maybe Down syndrome, or maybe it's just that they just decided that they just don't want to deal with the difficulty of having a child with a medical condition. Well, these two professors in this journal article says, no, it's okay. They should be able to have the child just terminated, killed, outside the womb, post birth. And Chuck, this is absolutely stunning. And the editor of the journal, Professor Julian Savulescu, who's the director of the Oxford Uehiro Center for Practical Ethics. See, there we go. Practical ethics. Practical for whom? Obviously not practical for the newborn child, but practical for those people who don't want to be bothered by things like having to care and nurture for a child in its early infancy and its years. He's all been out of shape, not because of the article, because you see the two people who wrote the article happen to be former students of his. He's been out of shape by the, what he calls, nasty or abusive and threatening responses that the journal has been receiving from those who have read the study. He said that these are fanatics opposed to the very values of a liberal society. Well, Charles, we've always said that if your society goes liberal, life is devalued. And obviously we're getting there.
This is the first of many, many, many equivocations. And remember, we talked about logical fallacy. Well, here it is. A liberal society, we're not talking about political liberalism, although that comes into play here. A liberal society is a quote-unquote free society, you know, liberality meaning essentially.
Sure.
So what he is claiming here is that what they are arguing for is the freedom to decide whether or not you want to be burdened with a child, healthy or sick. What needs to happen here, I think, is we need to show the presuppositional errors and how they build through the arguments. Let's take a look, first of all. Rather than being actual persons, quote unquote, newborns are, quote unquote, potential persons, they explain to the authors. Okay, right there we have it, Barry. The first major redefinition, an attempt to redefine.
Yes, an attempt.
That word personhood. In Ohio right now, there is a group that is attempting to define personhood as beginning at conception, by conception, fertilization of the egg by the sperm. What is the difference between this attempt to define persons and the petition drive group's attempts to define person?
Well, again, it's a spectrum issue. Our Personhood Ohio group is trying to define it at the moment of conception, when life begins. These researchers are basically saying, when it becomes convenient for other people, or as they said in their study, quote, we take person to mean an individual who is capable of attributing to her own existence some, at least, basic value, such that being deprived of this existence represents a loss to her. So honestly, that's only at the point where the individual can attribute to his own existence some basic value. In other words, I think, therefore I am. This is Cartesian philosophy 101.
Well, it's Cartesian philosophy carried out to its logical absurdity.
Exactly.
But let's talk about these. When you can't explain something in just a few words, there's an old saying, if you can't explain it in just a few words, you don't understand it.
That's right. Listen, you don't understand it.
Listen to this sentence again. We take person to mean an individual who is capable of attributing to her own existence some at least basic value, such that being deprived of this existence represents a loss to her.
To her. So in other words, they're saying cognition of the individual. They're talking about the child now. So the child has to have cognition and has a value system in place, so that if they lose something such as their life, they would know it. They would know that that would be a loss to them. Chuck, this is absolute, utter gibberish. These people are trying to talk on a PhD level and basically say, we're going to make this definition so vague that maybe what if we have an 8 or 9 year old child who's introverted and doesn't talk very much? Well, certainly, maybe they're just not. They're not capable of attributing to their own existence some basic value. So it really wouldn't represent a loss to them.
Barry, the enemy of drawing a truly logical conclusion to an argument is vagueness.
Yes.
And this is an attempt to muddy the water and make it impossible to really understand. If you can read this sentence and really understand what they are saying, good luck. Please call us and explain it to us. write us an email, write us some kind of a, you know, write us a letter. Our address is on the website, www.principletopolicy.com. Tell us what you think this means, because I know what this means. This means that they don't really want to define it. They want to leave it undefined so that the individual can define it themselves within the parameters of their quote-unquote personal feelings.
Mm-hmm. Well, so what they've gotten to, Chuck, from this ambiguity and this vagueness is an argument that says it's not possible to damage a newborn by preventing her from developing the potentiality to become a person in the morally relevant sense. Now, there's that loaded phrase, morally relevant. That's a subjective phrase, Charles. Morally relevant to whom? To those researchers? To the parents? To the doctors? Yeah, and whose morality is going to play the part here? Well, they keep going, and they finally reach a conclusion. And, of course, when you have bad premise A and bad premise B, you end up with a conclusion that can't be good. Two wrongs do not make a right in this case. And their conclusion is that, quote, what we call afterbirth abortion, killing a newborn, should be permissible in all the cases where abortion is, including cases where the newborn is not disabled. So what they're saying is we believe in an ethic and a society and in a culture where if we decide that child just shouldn't be here anymore, kill it. Honestly, these two researchers, it would be a criminal shame if they continued with their degrees. Whatever school that they got their degrees from should strip them of the degrees.
But of course that won't happen because the prevailing worldview of the day is moral relativism. And in fact, this is moral relativism, again, carried out to its logical absurdity. The fact is that when you stand for nothing, you'll fall for anything. And anyone who falls for this particularly awfully bad, and it's true, this is just a truly bad, terrible argument. Anybody who falls for this would go for anything. Well, look, we're out of time. That's
well, we're going to, let's continue this one on, because there's more to find out about these two researchers and the fact that it is a spectrum for them, because they actually are looking at the other end of the spectrum as well.
Yep.
And what they think about you when you get into your elder years isn't quite as shocking as what they want to do to newborns, but it falls right into the same parameters.
Yep. Join us for the follow-up tomorrow on Principles and Policies.